It is another edition of No Filter Sports, May 11th, 2020. Eli Zarrett, Bob Page, Denny McClain coming at you. And talk about our guest up in a little bit, the wild and wacky Bill Lee, one of the great characters in sports. Going to get into, as tedious and as upsetting as it is to all the plans to restart sports, and it seems like all the hypotheses and committees and conference calls and consulting with experts and blah, 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 it's as vague and uncertain, as arbitrary and confusing as ever, but we'll go into the various elements that are trying to come together to give us football again and to give us basketball, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I want to say one thing before, in fact, I'm talking too much here, Bob is going to accuse me of going off on a long
rave. Sure are.
Yeah, okay. Well, because I want to get into something.
Denny accused you that time. Brandon's going to accuse you next. So it could be the truth, some truth to this, Eli.
Is there a question at the end of this?
Classic Eli Zarrett question. Yeah. 2.5 minutes long.
That's right.
You know, I watch a lot of cable news, and I find it interesting when you have a long – this is why I ask long questions. You have a long format. You can kind of say what you think. Admit it isn't like we're on a 3-minute time frame with anything. We have an unlimited amount of time to talk. So you can give your own opinions and your own views, as well as asking a question. But I did want to say that the weirdest thing about all this, as tragic and awful as it is that on a personal level, I feel so guilty about this. It's like I'm out of the loop. I'm living comfortably in my retirement. You know, while so much of America is scrambling to get their check in the mail and to, am I going to get hired again? Are they going to fire me? Do I have a job? Can we find food? I'm living off, you know, my retirement, my savings. And it's so weird to be in the middle of a global crisis like this. And yet I'm able to stay in my own little world here and play golf at my club down the street. It's very
strange. There's a big article about this very day, Eli. I know you saw it because you read the Times every morning. The New York Times wrote a big article about this. Many people are so comfortable and they're living outside big cities and they're lovely homes and they got money. And I think, yeah, there probably is a source of guilt that goes
Bob,
with that.
Have you filed your unemployment application with Eli yet?
The government takes good care of me. I get my Social Security. I get my American Federation of Television and Radio Artists pension check. You get your MLB pension check.
Get my radio and TV too, Bob.
There you go. Yeah. And Eli gets his. So.
Nice. Since AFTRA, my union also merged with SAG, Screen Actors Guild, about 5 years ago, I get all kinds of other benefits. I get movies sent to me. I got all kinds of stuff. Like I'm Robert De Niro's buddy instead of just being.
And you can email anybody. So what I did last week was I emailed my all-time fantasy girl, fellow member Selma Hayek, wanted to know if she wanted to go out with me. She didn't respond. At least she hasn't responded yet. I'm holding out hope.
Imagine. By the way, Eli mentioned our guest this afternoon, today. I caught up with him this morning early. And I got to tell you, when I caught up with him this morning, he was in a parking lot of a library writing poems.
This is
answering
Bill.
His email. So Bill, he's got some great poems that you're going to hear today that you will laugh your butt off.
You know, Bill Lee, I always looked at as kind of a kindred spirit. I want to get into this a little bit with him.
Good guy.
But the point is, he was a pothead. He was kind of a tree hugger type of guy. He read Eastern philosophy, and baseball was such a deeply conservative world. All these old timers, all the silent majority, etc. And for guys that listened to FM radio, that smoked a little weed, that was anti-Vietnam War, baseball was this strange, conservative bastion. And guys like Billy had the guts. He had the guts to be himself, to say what he thought, to joke about sprinkling pot on his pancakes and stuff like that. And I'll tell you, there were a lot of potheads back in the 70s in sports. But like me, they all were in the closet. And Bill Lee had the guts, I guess you could say, or just didn't care and let himself be whoever he was and wore it on his
feet. Yeah, there's another factor to this, though. I interviewed Bill Lee every time the Red Sox came to Detroit when I was still working in my hometown. And one of the reasons I did, for all the things you just mentioned, but people have no idea, present company, Denny McClain excluded, how boring jocks are. they're just not interesting people most of the time. They're, you know, there's some guys are good with the media, some guys aren't. But Bill Lee was interesting, and he was funny as hell, and he was witty as hell, and that's what we're looking for in interview subjects.
Well, yes, I agree with you, but there's a difference also. Denny didn't smoke weed and wasn't counterculture, but he liked the microphone, so he would talk and give you stuff. Most guys, not everybody, is like us, where they never saw a microphone that they didn't like, and they were willing to put themselves on the line and talk and say what they think. And that's what's the problem in sports, because athletes, whether they're shy like Lou Whitaker or outgoing like Bill Lee, still have to face the microphones every day. And some guys will not let their personalities come through, and some will. Plus, you guys are very careful.
One guy said he wasn't going to face the microphones. He didn't have to talk to the media. I didn't really respect that, but it was a shame because Bill Russell was such a bright, interesting guy. Remember when you tried to talk to him one time, Eli? Mm-hmm. You know, it's that story you asked Bill about a book or something like that. He said you wanted to interview him for a book, and he said, no, I'd rather not. Well, right? Do you remember that?
You know, one of the other guys that you're talking about there is Steve Carlton. Steve Carlton could have made three times as much money in his career had he just been nice to everybody rather than getting everybody a pain in the ass interview all the time, if in fact he gave you an interview at all. But I got to defend the guys. On every ball club, there's always two or three characters that would love to be much more on stage than on a pitching mound. Honest to God. Our club, we had some of the funniest guys in the world in that club, starting with Pat Dobson, Ray Oyler, Dick McCullough. God, don't forget Norm Cash. You know, Gates Brown. I mean, I'm talking about guys who may have made a living telling jokes on stage for all I know. But you put that whole crew together, and it was a funny, crazy crew.
What's interesting,
by the way, with all of us put together, the IQ was about 12.
What's interesting,
you said that.
I did.
There weren't that many microphones back then. It was mostly sports writers. And what happens today, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, a lot of guys that do have personality and would let it come through, there's such, with the Twitter world, et cetera, you say something a little off color and it comes back to sting you. So guys get even more and more conservative and careful with what they say.
Yeah, but there's one other thing that I think you got to pay a little bit of attention to. The guys today, they realize there is a significant value in going on stage and grabbing a microphone. And it helps promote their career, helps promote their livelihood, it helps promote the ball club and any number of other things that they may be involved
right,
in.
But
every player's got something that they're doing off the field.
Right. But here's the thing, Denny. Most of the guys don't need to do that. I remember reading a biography many years ago about Johnny Unitas. Johnny Unitas, as soon as the Colts season was over, went back to the car dealership and sold cars. Sports made them famous so they could trade on their names in the business world. Now, guys making $5, $10, $20 million a year, they don't care about the business world or trading on their names. They got it made in a shade.
It's amazing how many guys I know, whether it's Detroit or other clubs, that have got businesses on the side. And I'm not saying that they're their businesses, but money they've loaned to their relatives, their mother, their father, whoever it might be. There's a lot of that going on. I mean, not everybody is just depositing their money like Gronk is in Massachusetts and not spending any. He's still, you know, they say he's still got his first paycheck from the Patriots. So he hasn't cashed it yet. I'll tell you who they used to say that about. They used to say that about K-Line. And they used to, you know, when do you think Al will ever buy his first round? It was the statement every night in the saloon. And and somebody would say, listen, as long as he hits 300, who the hell cares who buys?
Yeah, right. We talked with Frank Tanano about that the other day. I mentioned how smart he'd been with his money, didn't know anybody. So something on Twitter came up the other day, and I had occasion to go look something up about Flint Zone, Glenn Rice, the great University of Michigan basketball player. And I forgot, guy made, what, $60 million in the NBA, and 2 years ago filed for bankruptcy, something like that. He was in huge financial trouble.
It shows not everybody's the same. There were you remember Campy Russell's little brother, Walker D. Russell.
Oh, I remember Walker D.
Played for the Pistons, maybe, I don't know, a 3 or 4 year NBA career. And he did okay. You know why? He told me they gave me $40 meal money. I saved 35 of it. And he saved his money. He said, I'm a fringe player. I probably can, I'm not going to be able to bleed much out of this career. And one of the greatest, you know, things I'd ever heard an athlete say, he saved and saved and saved, which is the exact opposite of the way most people do him. And he's okay. He's been an NBA scout for decades since. One other thing we're talking about to get back to a little bit of a Corona thing that I touched down on earlier is, you know, Bob sent me the thing this morning. I hadn't seen that Jerry Stiller died. And I'm reading about the fact that Little Richard died. And I said to myself, look at this. With these tens of thousands of corona deaths, where people are dying alone without their families in the most grisly, awful way, we're concentrating, and there's good reason for this, on two huge show business deaths that took place in the last day. And, you know, and I always wondered about that when celebrities...
Neither from COVID, by the way.
Right,
that's Roy, it. And Roy Horn, though, if you want to add him in there from Siegfried and Roy. That's...
I didn't even know that. But
yeah, that was COVID.
Who was?
That was COVID, yeah. That lion trainer in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah, that guy, right. But, you know, so Little Richard dies of bone cancer. He's peaceful with his family around the way it's supposed to be. Jerry Stiller died of natural causes. And they're in the paper today, as opposed to the tens of thousands of people who have died in this grisly way. And I said, you know, there's a reason why this happens. And I always thought that why would, with 1,000 people dying every few hours, why do we always concentrate on the celebrities? It's because the obituary is more about us than about them.
Yes.
It's
yes.
the sentiment.
How they touched yes, our lives.
Exactly. Yes. And that's why nostalgia and sentiment are so valuable. It gives texture and continuity to our lives that are otherwise random and you can't control them and you never know when you're going to live or die or good or bad things are going to happen. And so that's it. So you think of Good Golly Miss Molly. I think of
Good Golly Miss Molly.
A little tutti frutti.
What you think of John? You think of Creedence Clearwater Revival and John Fogerty when that comes up? Good Golly Miss Molly.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Just Little Richard.
Because they did a huge version of that. Yeah.
I know. And how about Long Tall Sally? Everybody did the Beatles did a Long Tall Sally.
Yeah, sure.
But and then Stiller and Mara. Now, Stiller and Mara, I remember I saw on the Ed Sullivan Show in the mid-60s, and all we'd seen as kids in terms of husband-wife couples with the marital angst was George and Gracie Allen, and they were just so old school.
What Henny Youngman? Take my wife, please!
But she wasn't there with him, and these two, and of course he had that rebirth as the father of George Costanza on the Seinfeld
show.
But
every man's dream at one time, Donna Reed.
Yeah.
God, I love that show. I love Shelley Fabre so much. I want to tell this quick sports story about Jerry Stiller. Now, I think Brandon McAfee, our producer, and a lot of younger people, they didn't really know who he was, but they sure know who their son was, the great, the brilliant Ben Stiller, one of the top celebrities, comedians, movie stars in the country right now. So Anne was this Irish girl, married this little Jewish guy from New York, and she converted to Judaism, and they raised Ben, all right? Now, even if you were not from New York or the tri-state area with Connecticut and New Jersey, you likely know who Mike Francesa is, one of the famous and most wealthy talk show hosts in the country, and he's done so much national radio, too. So when I worked at MSG, we had a show called Live from the Play-by-Play. That was a restaurant, a sports bar we had upstairs. So to promote it, we did a live entertainment TV show. Francesa is one host, and we always had a good-looking blonde as co-host. Willow Bay did it, for instance, for a few years with Mike. So the good-looking blonde would interview the showbiz personalities. Francesa does the sports personalities, and they would throw it back to me in the studio once in a while for sports updates. One night, whichever blonde it was that year, was sick, and she missed the show. So she leaves Mike Francesa to host alone, and unfortunately, that was the night they booked Ben's mother, Ann Mira, for the show. So these two people, Ann Mira and Mike Francesa, this big, fat, beached whale, nothing about life. He knows nothing about life except sports. They're sitting on the set together, ready to do their thing, and they don't even know what to make of each other. I'm sure neither's even heard of each other. So Francesa starts, and he's so uncomfortable. So the producer says to Francesa in his ear, Mike, ask her what she's doing now. So it turns out Anne had her own play, off-Broadway show that she'd written and was starring in. And she says, so, Mike, I have this play. It's about love, and it's about marriage. Are you in love, Mike, right now? Francesa says, me? No, I'm married. The entire live audience went nuts, just rolling in the aisles. Francesa turned beet red, and that was Mike Francesa and Ann Mira for one night.
Well, I have to disagree with you because a lot of people think he doesn't know much about sports. He says a lot about sports, but he doesn't know much about sports.
Anyway, I've asked Mike. He says he does.
Yeah. He's a screamer. He's just a screamer.
Can we move back into our world now? And
we can try.
Yeah, we can. Exactly. we can try. I think the irony in all of this about trying to get the NBA started, by the way, Peter Vesey, we had on the show, had a tweet the other day that I happened to see when I tweeted out that we had Frank Tanat on the show. So I do, at least once a week, I look at my Twitter feed and see what's there. And he says, what happens when, not if, players, talking about the NBA, players, plural, test positive and a quarantine is ineffective and an NBA player dies? Is that what it'll take for the NBA to
That's
shut down?
That's what I want to know.
Give all options to play until it's infinitely safe. I don't blame any of them. They should be doing what they're doing. It's a very grim landscape here. Adam Silver and the NBA is the most progressive league there is. They're not going to do anything, you know, to risk anything beyond what's the basic risk we have to take. And they're trying to figure this out. And they really, really can't. He says the latest thing is, should we do it at one of two potential sites? He had this long conference call with Chris Paul, who represents the players, et cetera. Do it in Orlando and Las Vegas, and somehow to do it, he says, where you don't have to sit in a hotel room for 2 months in a particular market. But it's going to be very, very difficult to try and fit this in and then get another season started afterwards. So, it's impossible to figure out. I think we have so many steps to go through before this can happen. And we'll get into in a second when I hear what you guys have to say about this, what the UFC, the only league or the only entity sports that's returned, and it returned Saturday night, and it did it fairly successfully with nobody in the
stands. Did you see, Eli, did you read the ESPN website the next day? They had top headlines Sunday morning, six stories. One was U.S. soccer star Morgan, whoever that is, gives birth to her first child.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Alex
One was
Morgan.
The shot. One was the shocking story of Steelers coach Mike Tomlin saying it would only be fair if all NFL training camps opened at the same time, really. And the other four headlines all pertain to this human cockfighting event you just mentioned that they had Saturday night. You know, Scott Van Pelt, did you see this? Got some press a couple days ago when he said the ESPN, he told somebody, and his SportsCenter show were, quote, just making it up on a daily basis.
Well, a couple of other things, just along in line with what you guys have been talking about. There's one thing to point out. Today in Korea, they're having a big surge. Korea has been the number one country in the world that has really had this thing under control. Today, they've had a surge. And why? Who knows why? But the bottom line is they've had a good one today. And it continues to go on. They're waiting for the death numbers. I guess they get them in at night. But my question becomes, you've got, let's just talk the major sports for the minute, the four major sports. If a guy tests positive, let's say before the ball game, in the clubhouse with 40 other people in the clubhouse, and one guy tests positive, is that game off that night? Is that game off for a week, 2 weeks? Are they going to have to lay down for 2 weeks? What happens if one, two, or three people test positive? Where does the game go at that point?
Keep your eyes on the prize. And we've talked about this, and we've said we're not going to do coronavirus again. At that age, shape they're in, they will probably be asymptomatic. If somehow they do get any symptoms, they'll be fine in a couple of days. This disease does not kill people like that, Denny.
Well, it can.
It's killing babies right now.
It can. This, I,
That's
I,
an
I
offshoot. But anyway.
Listen, okay, we're getting into dangerous territory here. But I would say stop. You're both right, because a guy named Souza did test positive the day of the fight or the day before the fight.
Three guys did.
Yeah, and they pushed them aside, but they tested, I think, 1,200 tests they did. 1,200 I don't know if screening is a test. They did 1,200 screenings, 300 personnel just for the fight card, and 24 fighters, 300 personnel of ESPN, the ringside staff, and there were a few positives, but it says that the safety measures worked. What was strange about it, a little off the subject, and I saw the replay, is with no crowd, you could hear every punch. Yep. And the difference between a punch to the face and a punch to the gut. I mean, I'm not going to disagree. I'm not going to argue with human cockfighting. That's a bit of that's John McCain's characterization. But in any case, let's get into more of that and how it reflects on baseball and basketball. First, I want to remind you, though, that one business that's doing very, very well these days is David Hall and Hall Financial, because the real estate market is still on the move and they're working around from a home around the clock to help people save money by refinancing. So, you know, this is a great time to get a deal in a house. right now or refinance. If you haven't in the last year, you can lower your monthly payments, keep some extra money, and probably skip up to a payment or two. If you're worried about the coronavirus, in terms of this at least, don't, because homes can be appraised without anybody stepping foot inside. They drive by and do their appraisal that way. So it's the fastest in the business. Hall Financial Service is. They have nearly 1,500 five-star reviews for Michigan homeowners. Go to their website or get started by calling 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
So I want to get back to what you were just talking about. Can we continue with this? Yes, about please. The sounds that made with nobody there.
Yeah.
Real sports returned in another way over the weekend. Okay. It happened right under my nose here in Palm Beach County, Florida. I didn't know about it. Nobody else knew about it. And that's the way they wanted it. This is the four-player UTR Pro Match Series in tennis, kicked off Friday at an undisclosed location on a private tennis court in West Palm Beach. These are some of the top young players in the world. The Tennis Channel showed this live. Tennis Channel knew about it. We didn't. And of course, when the match was over, guys couldn't shake hands. They tipped rackets or whatever. And all you heard was the tennis, I guess the announcers too, nothing from the fans. There are no fans. I didn't watch it. I'm not that big a tennis guy, but it must be weird.
Get used to it.
Get used to it. Cause here's something that's going to affect baseball, at least for this year. This may not go very far after this first year. And maybe the only year, but Major League Baseball and the Players Association have agreed to reduce the 2020 Major League Draft to 5 rounds from the national 40 rounds that they do every year. Now, what they're saying is they just want to make this quicker, faster, leaner, and meaner. Well, what it really is all about saving money, because with only 5 rounds, you can only go to so many players. The only difference, number one, the people who really get beat up here are the kids coming out of high school or college. They have no representation on this part of Major League Baseball. And the teams can still sign undrafted players, but they can give them no more than $20,000 as a signing bonus. Mm. So they have got to, and by the way, the kids who are signing in the first 5 rounds, this will kill you, they can't get more than $100,000, and the Major League owners can pay them over 2.5 years, the $100,000. So something's going on here, and if they've got to make all of these different cuts, different programs, different applications, then those guys who are promoting this stuff should really look at their book and say, boy, I got to get out of this game. I can't afford it anymore.
Well, this is very interesting, Denny, because the way I look at this is you're seeing such a reduction in the rounds of the MLB draft that there's a lot of gems in there, 6, 7, 8, 9. Now, these players, they're basically going to get an opportunity to maybe go wherever they want. So doesn't this hurt those teams that are undesirable to go to, maybe the Tigers or the Twins, or, you know, teams that have, I don't know, maybe just a location where I don't want to play there. I want to play with New York. Doesn't this really benefit the Yankees, who can now pick and choose anybody they want?
I was just going
to
say
like they used to, Brendan, way before you were born. That's how the Yankees were so great. Right. They could pick and choose anybody they wanted.
And what I was going to say is that the teams with the money are still going to have the money and are still going to get the players, no matter what anybody thinks. This is just a way to save some bucks. But the big guys are still going to be able to spend the big
bucks. Yeah, Danny, but as I've said here before, they have to do this. Even billionaires don't like to lose gargantuan sums of money. They're on the hook for multi-millions of dollars in contracts. Danny, let me finish. When the season opens again, there are going to be very few fans, if any, in the stands, and the ticket prices are going to be slashed. They got to cut expenses.
Well, they say about 30%, and this is a hard, this, I just can't believe they could put a number on this. They say about 30% of the walk-ons are the money that comes into the ballpark over a year's period of time. Last year, Major League Baseball did $10.7 billion with every club thrown in the pot. But think about that. 30% is walk-in money. That's a lot of money on one hand. On the other hand, the NFL says it's 40-45% for them, which I have a tendency to believe because they sell out almost every game. But this is going to be a strong test because there's a drastic opportunity for the people with money, with big time money. But on the other hand, the clubs that don't have the money, don't have the gear up, they're going to be in trouble. And this is not going to go well for baseball over a period of time.
But think about this. Eli, let me say this. Let me just jump on that. Think about this, since you're mentioning the crowds at the baseball games. You know, you go to a crowded bar or disco at night in a city. Fire marshal says only 100 people can get in, and they stop them. So if baseball is limited to 15 or 20,000 fans, and you are one of those people who wants to buy a ticket outside and go, are you going to buy the ticket, or they're not going to sell you? They go, oh, I'm sorry. We have 15,000 fans already. You can't come in.
Yeah, and how do you get them out of there? How do you separate them to go out row by row? By the way, Adam Silver, when he was talking to Chris Paul and the others who represent the players yesterday to try and figure out what the hell they're going to do and where they're going, said that 40% of the league's revenue comes from money built around game nights and arenas. I thought that's right. A little high. That sounds a little high to
me.
That's
what I thought.
But in baseball, you know, a lot of teams don't draw that many. I shouldn't say, but they got 80 home games. Who knows? But as Silver also said, the CBA, meaning the collective bargaining agreement, was not built for extended pandemics. And so besides the logistics and the testing, and you got some states that are open and some that aren't, the Pistons, the NBA opened training facilities on Friday. The Pistons, only about 3 or 4 teams can go because depending on the state they're from. So it is such a cluster, you know what? It's just, I feel for all of them because we really need it back. By the way, go ahead.
Eli, you're giving me some beautiful segues today. You really are. And this is from Joel Sherman, the longtime and very well-respected baseball columnist of the New York Post. I haven't thought about this, and I bet you three guys sitting there haven't thought about this. Joel Sherman writes, imagine if the hard to believe actually happens, and over the next month or so, all the government officials give their approval for MLB to start spring training in mid-June and then play a 78 or 82 game season, sanctified, ready to go. And then the season never comes off because the two sides can't agree on pay. So if the sides know the end game is an agreement, do they really want to be seen bickering about how much the players are going to get and the owners are willing to pay with 14.7% unemployment in the U.S. and people still dying in large numbers from COVID-19? Again, the words of Joel Sherman.
As far as baseball goes, the contracts are guaranteed and they will get paid, except for a disaster, it says, within the contract. I had a lot of contracts, and I can tell you that there is a clause in there that says, in the event of a national disaster in the country and declared so, that in fact baseball can cease payments to their players. But I don't suspect we're going to get that far because I think we made a little bit of a comeback. Not much, but a little bit.
Well, no. What Sherman and Bob quoting him are saying is that it's to me, it sounds like there's so many things between testing and arenas and schedules and players and families that on top of it, You gotta, as Silver said, we didn't account for a pandemic. They got to renegotiate everything. So the money is a mitigating factor that is.
I guess they could prorate the salaries, right? That would be one obvious way to do it. But I don't know. I see quote unquote labor problems for MLB.
Well, not they only prorate,
agreed to pay the players a certain amount of money every day for, I think it's 60 days, 90 days, and then the rest of it they're going to have to sit down and negotiate a little bit more. Because what they have not done with the players yet, and I think this is a horrible mistake. Here we're coming into June here in just a couple more weeks, and they have not been presented from the owners any kind of a proposal to play the season. They haven't got it yet. And our player rep who runs this whole thing for us, he is just screaming and hollering all weekend about where is it? And they come out with a little statement this morning that said they thought they'd have it this week. So it's going to be interesting to see what their proposal is, because Bob's right about one thing. They will suggest something about payroll, no question about it. But they got to pay him for what they're going to do. I mean, the contracts are almost bulletproof. But if the players are going to be amenable to anything and they want to really play. See, here's the other thing. They had a big meeting last week with all the players, and about 50% of the players don't want to play. They just don't want to play. They think it's too dangerous.
This is just another a monkey wrench into the whole thing, the money, the safety. And when they do, they're going to, now, where is it? Where are my rules I have for it? If the NBA does manage to open, if they do manage to, guess what? Okay. When they're getting ready for the season and afterwards, only four players at a time are permitted access to practice facilities and must use separate baskets. No group activity such as scrimmaging is allowed. This is a training camp. No more than four assistant coaches are played. The rules are so going to be restrictive in terms of what is, you know, it's training, it's players playing, it's scrimmaging, it's hanging out in the locker room. I mean, there's the masks and all that. It's just going to be, I mean, you got to keep trying, and there's a lot of money at stake. What did we say last week, $12 billion has been lost so far. But anyway, if I can slightly segue here to...
Don't segue before I ask my question.
Go ahead.
Whatever happened to Willa Bay?
I don't know. Whatever happened to her? She married a guy named Bob Iger.
Oh my goodness.
Of Disney. Willow Bay probably might be a little too long in the tooth to model anymore. God, was I told her one day in the office, she was sitting there and she said, "Hi Bob," and I looked at her and I said, "Honey, I'm this close to you because I just want to see if you're really as beautiful in person as you are in all the modeling." Wow. And you are. And she was. She's got so many gazillions of dollars. She and Iger probably are off on an island in the South Pacific they own right now.
I was going to say they probably own a couple of them out there.
You were talking about, I forget what you were talking about. But in any case.
Willow Bay.
Well, no. You were talking about the tennis tournament. And the fact is that people are desperate. I mean, we're watching old games. We're watching old sports, anything. And so, you know, a tennis tournament, if it's happening now and I can bet on it, everybody's in. But I'm going to call this in the will watch anything phase of this no sports withdrawal. This is a story we could have done the other day, but I saved it. Mike Tyson is considering a comeback. He's 53 years old.
So am I.
His trainer says he looks amazing and that pretty soon, you'll have the same power as guys 21, 22 years
How
old.
How are his reflexes?
Of course.
That's what it's about.
Exactly. But here, of course, he's 53 years old. Any decent, solid heavyweight today would beat Mike Tyson. He will wear him out. You just can't compare. However,
he'll kill him.
And if he fought Tyson Fury, who was named after him by his father, John Fury, he would destroy Mike Tyson. He's also twice as big as he is. But John Fury, the father of the Gypsy King, Tyson Fury, is 55, says, "I want to fight Mike Tyson. I don't value my life. Mike is somebody worth doing charity with. He's a king of a champion. I'll fight Mike Tyson."
And you say this guy's a member of the Gypsy Kings?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow, who knew? Great band. God. And somebody also fights?
Well, Mike Tyson, though, to fight in a bare knuckle championship match, he's been offered $20 million. So that,
and Brandon, that's what it's all about. That's why he's doing this. He's broke again, I'm sure.
Now, you got to remember too about Mike Tyson singing or dancing or whatever the hell he's going to do. He had a little trio at one time. It was Mike Tyson and the three something. I forget what they called the group, but it was Mike Tyson and somebody.
Now, the point I'm trying to make is, you guys continue to interrupt me, but that's quite all right, because I appreciate it. I appreciate everything.
Rambling.
I appreciate everything you're saying.
This is an Eli question.
The difference is when you play a baseball game or a basketball game or even a tennis match, the matchmaking has to be equal. The Yankees can't play against a Class A team. They will clobber them. But in combat sports, it's all about matchmaking. So you could, and a perfect example is this. 2 years ago or 3 years ago, Floyd Mayweather fought Conor McGregor in a boxing match that everyone in the world knew, except for the idiots out there, that Mayweather couldn't lose. He was fighting a guy who wasn't even a boxer. I told people when I was doing a radio show, bet the farm on this. You can get 20% of your money. He's only a 4-1 favorite. He should be a 400-1 favorite. And of course he won. So you can do this.
Eli, what did you bet? You don't have a farm. What did you bet?
I didn't have a bookie. I would have bet everything I had, but you had to bet a lot.
I won a couple hundred dollars.
If you bet $100,000, you were guaranteed to win $20,000, but whatever it was. In any case, you can do this. And Mike Tyson could come back fighting guys who are his equal, like the 55-year-old guys. And it could still be entertaining. And that's just a fascination.
But there's no other 55-year-old guy out there that's going to want to fight.
Right. But,
you know, you take one shot to the chest by a guy who can hit, you could be dead.
Listen, Why do you think you see a guy who's 22-0 get into the ring to fight for a championship? They have set him up with 22 carefully selected opponents, so he's got a perfect record.
Made
against. Then he goes in against a real fighter and gets his ass kicked.
Right. So, but Eli, let me, because you guys are the, you three guys are the boxing experts. I certainly am not. What state would license a 55-year-old man to fight?
Vegas,
Nevada.
How about
you think Nevada would? You think Nevada would?
Yep.
Yeah.
And if not Nevada, listen, if you couldn't find a state here, there's a country out there that would.
Now, if Jacksonville, Florida sanctioned the UFC card, you don't think they'd sanction a fight?
Yeah, you're right, Eli.
Come on now. Be serious here.
I just can't get over that form of sport. These guys are, why wear any kind of glove? I mean, my Lord.
It's almost voyeurism. I used to really enjoy boxing. I don't anymore because I look at them as delivering life-changing concussions to each other. I used to think, naively enough, well, you get beat up, but you know, you're okay in a week and you can come back and fight again. But when you know now what the permanent damage is, it wasn't occasion there was a punch-drunk fighter, a guy who had 200 fights, but you thought it was reasonably safe for the others, not anymore. Hey, for nearly 20 years, Luke Nowacki has worked with individuals, families, business owners. He's helped them gain some clarity about their financial situation. And who doesn't need clarity now about your financial situation with what is going on in this crazy world we're in? That's where you should call Luke at Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Let him look at your portfolio. Let him make some suggestions because there are moves that need to be made that are unique to this time period. Call him at 248-663-4748. The consultation is complimentary. He will answer all your financial questions and maybe put you on a path that can help you make the best of this coronavirus world that we are now in. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. Other marketing names, products, services, revenues here independent of Royal Alliance Associates. Call Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, 248-663-4748. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. And coming up shortly, the one and only Spaceman, Billy.
That's cool. I got a lot of stuff also in the mailbag, which is coming up for Denny.
Okay, good.
And I got a story to give to Denny right now. I'm going to tell him the story, then I'm just going to sit back and listen to him go ape you know what over it. This came out the other day. It already looked bad enough that Denny's beloved hometown Chicago Bears drafted his hero Mitchell Trubisky with the number 2 pick in 2017, ahead of other quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. Mm. But it turns out that the Bears never even talked to Watson before the draft. They never interviewed him or spoke with him. The Bears never once talked to me, is a quote from Deshaun. He tweeted that on Friday in response to a tweet from Fox Sports radio host Doug Gottlieb. It was going on. They have some mini feud. Can you believe that, Benny? I mean, Denny, if you're the Bears, you don't even want to talk to Deshaun Watson?
The Bears are suffering from the same thing the Lions have suffered from. Not as badly, but pretty much. They just don't have a big-time front office. What I get tired of is our guys who are becoming general managers who were not players, were not a part of the game until all of a sudden, and with all due respect to everybody that's got a degree out there, they got some kind of a degree in business or marketing or something, and all of a sudden, 3, 4, 5 years later, they became the general manager, and they're picking guys left and right.
Denny, we need guys like Matt Millen who played the game.
Yeah, another Matt Millen.
Players that can really step in and know exactly what
Eli, don't forget Matt Millen.
But we need the Matt Millen that was the player. That's how smart he was when he was a player. But somehow he must have had a brain concussion of some kind, because whatever he played with, he left on the field.
Eli, please, a little love for the former Ohio State All-American offensive tackle, Russ Thomas, then went on to become the NFL's general manager.
Oh, my God. Where's Hollow Bay when you need her?
I know that.
Go ahead. I wanted to throw in one more example of leagues desperately trying to figure out how to play again. Did you read the interview in the Free Press with – no, it wasn't an interview. I take that back. Ward Manuel did a podcast with John Jansen and talked about U of M's plan to come back, and it is so vague, it is so nothing, it makes you realize he has no clue, and I don't blame him. I'm not knocking him for this. You just can't.
Yeah, that must have been a hard-hitting show, Eli. I can just hear Jansen was such a great player at Michigan. So, Ward, what's wrong with this football program? It's embarrassing to all of us who were all Americans at Michigan.
No,
Michigan was Michigan.
No, the real question would have been, that you would have asked, maybe I would have asked, but I know you would have asked. Ward, you were a player in the 70s when Dr. Robert Anderson was there.
Yeah.
He stick his finger up your butt also. Yeah, and if so, right. Why didn't you say something about it then? No. But anyway, he says that June 1st is a possible day for us to return to organized team activities. But there's so many problems here. He says we'll have to wear masks. We'll have to have temperature checks. This is what everybody's going to have to do to become the new normal. And if there's no students on campus, how can you have athletes there? You can't bring the players back if it isn't safe for the students. It is such a mess. And in terms of the money, he says, we'd never put the health of the players ahead of money. But people have three choices, Michigan fans that have been going to that stadium for decades and paying serious dough.
This is a stretch, but they've been putting the players ahead of injuries for a long, long time with cortisone and everything else that they throw into a player.
Of course.
The other thing, too, let me make one more quick point, is that, you've got all of these players on each team, 50, 60, 70, whatever it might be. And in this current condition, the teams are going to have more players than they've ever had before because of the issues that could arise during the game. So I just wonder, how are you going to take enough time out before, during, or after the game to test everybody as they may have to be doing this when they come in and out? Because just think about it. Guy runs into the line, 11 guys hit him. Who's got the virus?
Well, they could wear masks, I suppose, but still.
Yeah, ridiculous. They're not going to die of coronavirus at their
age.
No
one is saying they're dying of it, but what do you do when you – listen, everybody right now, when they get the virus, they are put in jail for a while, right?
What?
Quarantine means.
Oh, Bob. I don't know what you did this morning, but don't do it again.
Don't take any more of it, please.
No, please, Bob.
This guy, you're going to let that pass? This guy just said that people who test positive for COVID-19 are put in jail.
And he meant quarantined. He meant quarantined.
I don't care what he meant. Jail, he said jail.
Quarantine, same thing, Bob.
Oh, it is. Okay.
It is.
God. Fine. So anyway, I wanted to mention what Harbaugh did on Thursday, naturally, after we had finished recording the show. And Sports Figures are always doing this to us.
You mean the Mr. 10-win season, man?
Yeah, that's right. So Jimmy comes out, and he argues that the NCAA and the NFL should let college football players declare for the draft at any point they choose and remain eligible to return to college if they are not drafted. So currently, guys have to be 3 years removed from high school before they can leave for the NFL. And if they do declare, they are not allowed to come back. Now, no way the NCAA is going to adopt this because it makes too much sense. But already Harbaugh's being ripped by a lot of media people saying, well, who's that going to help? Michigan and programs like Michigan.
I think they're going to get closer and closer to a program like that. We may not still be around, but I'm telling you, they're going to get closer and closer now that they're giving them the ability possibly to sell their image, make a little bit of money selling cars, doing this, doing that. No, nothing. There's nothing bad about trying to pay these players something.
No. What he's saying is very progressive. And yes, you're right, Bob, because the numbers are out there. Since 2013, 29 Buckeyes have entered the draft before their eligibility was gone, and much fewer have done that in Michigan. So he can't keep up in the draft anymore, or not the draft, but in recruiting. And he's trying to figure out a way to kind of flatten the curve in college football, where Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia are just so far ahead, he can't catch up any other way besides putting more teams in the playoffs. And also hoping that the guys that go to Ohio State will turn pro after their freshman and sophomore year. And that way the five stars will go on to the NFL and he has a chance of beating the guys that are left over. But that's the way it's going to eventually work for everything. I think it's restraint of trade. Some guys, you just can't forever prevent people from earning a living when they're capable of doing it.
Why don't we go out and get Joe Burrow?
Well, he's been drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals. That's with whom he's going to sign.
But he hasn't signed with anybody.
Well, whatever. They're dicking around.
Oh, I see.
If you can have these kinds of rules, he can go back to college tomorrow and play quarterback one more year. Yeah. He hasn't signed a contract yet.
Okay, so Denny, you're talking about, as we have so much on this program, college players being paid. So I want your and Eli's opinion about this, whether this is fair, whatever it is. We have attorneys representing Zion Williamson's former marketing rep
lawsuit.
And her company. So isn't this funny? These people who were suing Zion, they want him to admit that his mother and stepfather demanded and received gifts, money, and other benefits illegally from persons acting on behalf of Adidas, Nike, legally, and also get this.
Time out. Legally, just against NCAA rules. Perfectly legal to give people a gift. Perfectly legal. But go ahead. So don't call it illegal.
I'm not, in violation
of NCAA's one-sided rules.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're right. Of course you're right. And anyway, so the deal is that they're also trying to implicate Duke because he's had a couple of boosters came by and tried to entice him with illegal, whatever
not
you
illegal,
want to call it.
Eli. Not illegal. Not
there
illegal.
There you go. Right. You're right. At any rate, they're trying to entice him to come to Duke. So, I mean, if they were, you know, a lot of people take, for instance, again, the case of Anthony Carter, who's from down here in Riviera Beach, not far from me. I mean, his parents somehow, you know, got to games at Michigan and stuff. Michigan doesn't buy people. Do you think Bo knew anything about that whatsoever? If some booster said, yeah, here, I'm going to buy an airplane ticket. Mike Krzyzewski, if this was going on at Duke, I guarantee you knew nothing about it.
Oh,
and
sure.
He's going to be livid about it.
Because you're a Dookie, of course, because you're a Dookie. And they're in a different world. Yeah, give me
it's not
point.
Just that. It's the same with Tom Izzo, and it was the same with John Beilein. They don't cheat. They don't have to cheat.
Listen, they don't cheat. They have somebody else do it.
Exactly.
Well, that's my point, Dennis. That's what I said, and they don't know about it.
Here's the other thing. This lawsuit you're talking about, this is a big lawsuit. This has a crushing effect on college all the way across the board if these people win. By the way, three people are already in jail for this kind of case, typical of this case. And then next, you know who else got convicted here? Michael Avenatti. He's the other guy that got convicted because he tried to extort Nike of $30-40 million.
This is so ugly. Now you've got, and I want to get into the story. Adidas is suing the family of Brian Bowen, the kid who blew up this whole thing with the Christian Dawkins and all that, the kid from Saginaw who was going to go via Dawkins and Adidas to Louisville. Now Adidas is suing the Bowen family. All these people did was they got a talented kid. They're living in poverty in Saginaw. And here's people coming, throwing them buckets of money, $100, stacks of bet. Yep. And they're supposed to say, oh, no, it's against the rules. We don't want we don't want to eat next week. Let's let him go to college and sit there for 4 years and not be able to afford a pizza. But when he becomes a pro, then we'll all be OK. You got to throw the whole damn system out.
And still, Eli, that clown, help me, I can't remember his name, who's the head basketball coach at Ole Miss or Mississippi State. They got him on the telephone. They recorded him making
Sean Miller. Sean Miller, yeah.
No, not Sean. Well, Sean Miller was part of that scandal. The guy at Mississippi or Mississippi State,
all of them. Yeah.
They got him on a recording.
It was a guy at LSU. Will Ward?
That's the guy, something like that.
But he's still got his job. Yeah, one thing before you finish this. They got transcripts and tape recordings of these two people who are on trial in the civil court with tape recordings, and they are dramatic. So if you want to pull this down, go pull down this case with Zion Williamson, and you will not believe some of the quotes that are coming across on that they taped.
And so it reflects poorly on the kid who's just a basketball player. Reflects poorly on us. I don't know what kind of a family he comes from, but it's all so. I'm glad it's all come out in the open at least, because this stuff has bothered me for the last 40 years. And finally, you know, it's like the same thing with now you got golfers taking cannabis all day long as they chew it when they're playing golf. And you know, as I could talk with Billy, it's gone from reefer madness to medical miracle cure. It's the same thing with the nonsense about money in sports. Bob, did you write this, the article, I want to get into this with Denny here, about the 69 Mets Orioles series that was on Sports Station New York or SNY?
Go ahead. If I did, tell me what I allegedly said.
Maybe it was an article. Because it just said how they showed the 69 World Series, and the author was hoping that Rob Manfred.
Oh, no. Okay, I got it. I sent that to you.
The average game, the games were 2 minutes, 2 hours and 13 minutes, 2 hours and 20 minutes. The only one that lasted 2:33 was a 10-inning game. The pitchers weren't pulled. The players didn't get out of the batter's box between pitches. The play-by-play was solid. The screen wasn't junked up with a bunch of stats and everything. And he said, what a refreshing presentation it was.
Okay. Here's the thing.
Baseball was presented 50 years ago.
Right. I did send that to you. Not my words, though. It came directly out of Phil Mushnick's column in the New York Post. And I had hoped that you would pause, or we would pause, after everything Mushnick said, so Danny McClain, who played the game, can comment on it.
Why didn't you send it to me? I would have been prepared.
You don't check your email.
You don't prepare anyway. Right. You didn't even know how to spell the word.
But
prepare.
I will tell you this: I'm getting a lot of email, folks.
Now you're back to your dating game that you're playing online.
At least 500 more pictures of women over the weekend.
Yeah, well, tell you what, pal. If you want one, just send them a picture of you fully naked. That's how you get from 500 down to one.
What did you call the things when we were kids that they'd say you got to send this to 20 friends, then you wind up getting a million in return?
Yeah,
you got chain
list.
Go back a little bit and do a little more slowly, Danny. I want you to comment on this as long as we have time.
Well, we have about a minute. Then we got to take a break into the mailbag real fast, and then we're going to get to Bill Lee. But go ahead.
Well, I'm waiting on Eli's question because it's normally long.
Well, let me ask this, Brandon. We're at about 50 minutes. Should I say goodbye to radio now? I think we're in the ballpark.
You teased him too much.
We'd like to thank the listeners in WCWA and WDFN in Detroit, WCWA is in Toledo, of course, for listening. If you want to hear Bill Lee and the rest of the show, just log on to nofiltersportscast.com. For now, though, you have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Okay, so Denny.
Throw a line at Denny and let him comment. It doesn't have to be long. Go ahead.
Am I going
batter to step out of the batter's box? Take that one.
It's okay. Guys been stepping out of the batter's box ever since the game was invented, so there's no issue there. It's okay. The idea that they're throwing too many pitches today. Just wait. You know, when you got 4 and 5 pitchers in on both teams normally, you know, that's 8, 9, 10 pitchers a game. That takes a lot of time.
Yeah, so, Phil mentioned that.
I mean, that to me, that's the biggest problem that they have in baseball. Number one, too many pitchers in each game. And number two, they throw too many damn pitches in each game.
And so, they spend too much time between pitches.
And the reason why is because the control is no good. The control is inadequate. It's mediocre at best. You get one guy once in a while, like this guy Cole, and you got Justin, and they got great control. They can do whatever they want to do. But the majority of them, I bet 75% of them couldn't hit a corner where the glove is sitting 3 times in a row.
Yeah, they nibble. Back in your day, you didn't
nibble, 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 nibble. Nobody challenges anybody anymore unless you're a Verlander or a Cole or somebody like that.
I think I've told the story, but I'll tell it again. First time Denny and I went to a game together and we started doing the show early 90s, and Petrie is back in his last gasp for the Tigers in 1991, I think. And we're up in the press box playing the Orioles. First two pitches, strike. Then he goes ball one, nibbling outside, takes his time, walks to the back of the mound, rubs up the ball, comes back ball two, nibbles inside, walks back to the end of the mound, takes the, looks at center field, turns around. By the time he misses high and away with ball three, then he says, "That's it. Let's get out of here. I can't take this. We just got here. The game just started." He said, I just can't watch guys play like this. But anyway.
All I got to say about that is this. If, as opposed to in Denny's era, if I'm facing these kids who do nothing but lift iron, sometimes on roids, they're 6'5", 240 pounds. Yeah. I'm going to nibble too. I'm not coming in with my fastball for you.
All right, go ahead. Let's get to the mailbag. Okay.
All right.
Mailbag.
All right. We got the mailbag now. And I will remind you folks that you can tweet any of us individually if Eli and Denny ever actually check their Twitter account, which they do that often. That's at Eli Zarrett, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. You can call our hotline, leave a message, or text us at 760-89-BALLS. Let's begin with this tweet right here. I'll get to the email address later. So D Champ Green texted me, "Great show as usual with George Blaha. I feel like George just got started, then the interview was over. I feel that way on most of the interviews you guys do. Anyone else think the interview segment is too short, or is it just me? And all I got to say, thanks for the compliment, man. That's a real compliment.
What we try and do is we try and do half an hour, and sometimes half an hour seems long, sometimes seems short, but I think half an hour is plenty to keep a guy. So
okay, that's now we're gonna plug Eli here. He'll like this. Nathan Litke writes, "Great interview with George Blaha. I love the episode, and also let it be known that I'm a huge fan of Eli's and his book, Blue Collar Blueprint. Great read about the history of the Pistons franchise. My dad picked me up an autographed copy when it first came out. So Eli, I'm sure a lot of people would want to read that book. How can they get it?"
I didn't have any left. George Blaha bought my last 7. I got like 8 or 9 left.
It's on Amazon, right?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I was laughing with George because I said, well, George, you know, if you want more than seven, you go to Amazon. So I go to Amazon. I look, well, here's one for $68. Wow. Signed by the author. I go, I'll sign it for you for free. Point is, I don't think there's that many out there. And with supply and demand, sometimes they can be a little pricey.
Well, let's print some.
I don't think enough people care. I really don't. They don't care. No.
They care. Listen, you know, we still sell 100-150 books a month.
Well, your book is different. Yours was better than one of the 84 Tigers was better, but you're more of a national figure. But
the 84 Tigers were better than ours?
No, oh, God, don't open that can of worms, Eli. I can't believe you did that.
I said
didn't he do that, Bob?
No. I said the most successful book I wrote was the one with you. The second one was the 84 last night.
Okay, I'm going to just make sure.
Let's go. Back to the bag.
I still love
you.
So the gentleman who actually goes by the handle on Twitter, the Not Awful Mailbag, he writes, Eli, as stated Thursday by Bob, your favorite part of the terrific mailbag segment is, quote, last letter, unquote. That is not nice, Eli. And Ron Grubbs chimes in. Once again, a can't-miss episode of No Filter featuring Frank Tanana.
So far up your ass, I can't even believe it. Grubber.
Denny McLean and Bob Page. So here's what Grubber says. In these times, advertising's hard to get. Yet the mailbag itself gets a sponsor, and Eli's only response is, thanks, and let's do the last letter as soon as possible?
Joe DeSanto. Yes, it's the Joe DeSanto mailbag. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention his name. By the way,
Brian Fuson. I hope I got that name right, Brian Fuson, F-U-S-O-N. Eli, Denny, and Bob just keep raising the bar with the best sports podcast out there. Fantastic interview with Frank Tanana. If you're not listening to No Filter Sports Podcast, check it out. Well, of course, at the moment, you are listening to us. But you know what? I just want to thank, on behalf of all three of us, I just wanted to thank Brian and all of you out there who've retweeted the link to our show website. You told your friends about our show, your family, your acquaintances. We got nothing going on without you.
Some of our listeners are so write so well. They're educated. Yeah. They write so well. So last week you read part you read part of a letter from a guy named Carl Dobronsky. At one point, at one point he says, sorry if too wordy, I held back 90% of my thoughts in an attempt to be concise. I go back. The letter he wrote was 720 words. If he had held back 90%, it would have been an 8,000 word essay that he would have written if he said all he wanted to. No punctuation mistakes. Very impressive.
But I'm happy you did that again. You're setting me up today, Eli, because I had this ready to go.
One more. There was a beautiful letter that you read, written about Dave Bing. I don't have Bing's email. Right. I sent it to Kelser. I said, please forward this to Bing. I don't know whether he hears flowery praise all the time.
Yeah, we did it last show.
Yeah, I don't know if he hears flowery praise all the time. And Greg said it was a great letter, so he sent it on. So, when they write good ones, we let the people who they write about.
I haven't heard Iffy the Dopester lately.
Bob is anxious to talk. Go ahead, Bob. You got the floor. Go ahead, Bob. Continue.
Trying to do the mailbag, and I get blowback. I get pushback, and I get blowback. I know Denny loves the mailbag.
Are you going to read this one, though, Bob? Are you going to read the one that says, oh, poor little narcissistic Bobby Page getting butthurt once again because George didn't give him
his proper
due?
Those don't make it.
Are you going
to get to that one?
Okay. So what does little Bobby do? He takes it upon himself and blows up the interview. I got about 10 of those we're not going to read. Go ahead, Bob. What do you got?
And I actually had that down here. And since you're messing up my segue, I'll just find some of this right now.
Flustered, Denny. Look how flustered
he is. We're talking about one of the listeners wrote about how much he enjoyed, again, the Tanana and Blaha interview and so on and so forth. And he says it's such an interesting story that I told about how George Blaha actually got the Pistons job at WJR, so on and so forth, in part and only a small part after my discussion with Frank Beckman, who was running the show back then. So what I wrote in response to this is, to pick up on what you're saying, Eli, a couple of my haters here who don't make the mailbag anymore because of their vituperative language and obscenities directed mainly at me, they tried to call BS on that story. That was a private conversation between two people, Frank Beckman and me. what would my motivation have possibly been for making this up or anything up? And again, you use swear words, use vituperative language. You ain't making the mailbag unless Zaret wants to read it on his own, which he just did.
Well, here's one by Dennis Hyde, who really hates you.
No, yes, I don't want to read that guy.
I was going to read it for you. That's okay.
That guy's not making the show.
It's only two sentences.
Yeah, I bet. You can imagine what the two sentences are, right?
He goes, now that George knows it was you that got
well,
on the
I'm
job.
Well, I'm just thinking, let me throw one thing in. I can't imagine Bob and Beckman talking to each other.
Well, you know, I mean, if I saw Frank today, I'd say hi, shake his hand. Yeah, just Bob. We have professionals.
And then you'd let him go down the hallway, and then you'd say, "Oh, that son of a."
Are we close to my favorite words? Are we close to last?
Not month? Without this one, because this is our letter of the week. Clearly, good. Comes from our website submissions, asknofilter@gmail.com, and not just because this is the first letter we have ever gotten from. Ready for this? Edmonton, where we hope Kenny Holland's doing fine.
We do.
So the fan writes, this is to you, Danny. The fan writes, Dear Mr. McLean, I enjoyed your interview with Frank Tanata, but the pitcher he was talking about was Dickie Knowles, who pitched in the 80s. Your teammate was Darryl Knowles, the reliever from the 70s. Remember,
they were both
I was
named
asked,
Knowles.
But they spelled them differently. One is N-O-L-E-S and one is K double.
Exactly. Yeah, K.
Let me correct that. He's talking about that Knowles. I'm talking about the one I played with.
That's fine.
Okay, I'm glad you got that straight. So anyway, this is Jack Morrow, who's writing from Edmonton, and he continues on. He's very nice. He sent some links to Baseball Reference about Frank's dad playing in the minor leagues and other relatives. And then Jack Morrow adds, Denny, I found your comment interesting about God being a left-hander. Judges 20:16 in the Bible mentioned 700 chosen left-handed men from those living in Gibeah who could sling a stone at a hair and not miss. They had great control, but whether they had motion on their fast stones and curves is not recorded.
Well, Dubai, the word is Dubai. It isn't Dubuya.
G-I-B-E-A-H. I'm hardly a biblical scholar.
I think what you've just done is prove my point that God is a left-hander.
Okay, very good. There's one I also want to get to here, depending upon how much more time. I got a lot more stuff, actually.
No, we
got
to talk to Bill Lee. So let's make this the last one. What do you say?
Okay. Oh, yeah, we got to.
And the rest of you folks, we got some great letters here today. We'll just hold them over to Friday. This is very interesting. Chris S. writes, as a displaced Detroiter, a Wolverine alum, and fan of all the local sports teams, I was so pleased to have found you guys, familiar voices from past chapters of my ill-spent youth. Yet, as time went by, the show could not keep politics and religion out of the content. Despite saying over and over again, we don't want to get into politics and religion, you inevitably did. So I don't listen as much anymore. I just thought you might appreciate the feedback. And I want to say this. We always appreciate constructive criticism like yours, Chris. I hope this is unwarranted, but we all apologize, you and everybody else. We could not stop our buddy, Denny McLean, from asking Frank Tanano about his Jesus and Bible views. And I never called Eli after that show to ask if we should strike that part of the conversation. So that's why I just thought that was part of who Frank was.
Exactly right. That is who Frank Tanano is.
I thought he answered that question beautifully.
Perfectly.
And I cringed, but in retrospect, you know, maybe Frank has learned over the years. He doesn't try and lay it on you.
Right.
He strictly said in a very factual way how he came to Jesus, and I thought it was fine.
And I will tell you, I was surprised at his response because I thought he would really lay it on. That's what I was looking for, and I was more than pleased with the answer. Not because of the shortness of it, but just how he made his point so quickly.
And it was the second time we talked about it, really. By the way, before we go and talk to Bill, I want to thank Doug Witten, Matt Schroeder, Kurt Kosmowski, Joe Kennedy, Jeff Keller, Dominic Newman, $100 from Mike Freeze and Joe Kennedy.
Danny, this goes to a vote now. You and I are now going to overturn Eli's unilateral statement that all the money goes to cleaners. We want a cut of this dough.
Well, we have to make something. I'm trying to figure out how to give us a nominal salary here. But in any case, well, that's for another time. You can go to the donate button. Trying to figure out a way. So if all of our 15,000 listeners gave $1 a month or $5,000 a month, we could survive much more solidly on this show. Let's talk to Bill Lee, okay? What do you say, guys?
But let's thank everybody for all their help and support. It's been great.
It's been great. Imagine it's the late 70s. Tens of millions of baby boomers have been smoking weed, but baseball, steeped in alcohol culture, didn't get it, didn't want to get it, wouldn't allow it. I knew plenty of stoners back in the game that would hit it because it would cost you your job. But Bill Lee had the foresight and brazenness to build a counterculture persona around his lifestyle rather than live a lie in baseball's conservative mainstream culture. And isn't it interesting how back then when I started in the late 60s, it was called reefer madness. And now, how do you like it? It's a miracle cure. Hey, Bill, you got PGA players chewing on cannabis and it's perfectly cool. Different day and age, isn't it, today?
Unbelievable, as I stare out at my 47 acres of CBD oil growing right now, trying right. to mellow out and cause every headache to go away.
That's right. I was just reading Billy Horschel today saying, my goodness, my joints don't ache anymore. I'm sleeping better. I'm more relaxed. You know what the problem is, Bill? They take the THC out. I'd make them keep the THC in and play stone. That's a little bit to offset the other benefits for them of CBD.
I want to tell you, I beat the... what was it? I was stoned out of 3 grams of hash with Willoughby and Carbo, and Zimmer sees me in 78, and he's already taken me out of the rotation. He knows I'm really messed up. So he brings me in against Seattle, I think in about the third inning, and we're down. I never threw the ball over 78 miles an hour and threw 5 scoreless innings.
Oh, sounds like Frank Denana.
Yeah,
I could not exactly. I couldn't throw, but I could sure pitch.
Well, tell us this. Tell us about your new. I don't know if it's a newfound talent, but tell us about your poems that you're now writing.
Oh, I'm writing. I'm on chapter 35 of the Spaceman Chronicles about an Earthling named Bill Lee, and it's written in the voice of Kurt Vonnegut and Saul Bellow and a lot of the people I grew up reading and writing about. And it's got R. Buckminster Fuller from Southern Illinois University, who invented the geodesic dome. And it's just basically, I'm finally getting at my age to voice my own opinion. And I think the statute of limitations is up. I mean, there's a list in there of about 5 chapters of people that you don't want to be in that chapter. You know, the Haywood Sullivans, the bad general managers, the Bo Schembechlers, those type of guys that really crossed me. Keith Hernandez has got a really bad chapter in there when he turned state's evidence and got Bernie kicked out of baseball. You know, Bernie's one of the chapters in my book is called Bernardo, and it's basically about a young boy that was not allowed to play with the white boys in Detroit, got scouted and ended up Rookie of the Year and for the Cincinnati Reds, you know, ahead of Johnny Bench. And that's Bernie Carbo, the great pitch hitter that we had.
I just want to say, Eli, that I'm glad Bill mentioned that, because a lot of people, Detroiters even, don't know that name. Bernie was from Livonia, one of our own, and he hit it, as Bill said, he did some big hits in the World Series playing for the Reds. He's gone now.
2 pitch hit home runs.
Yeah.
And let's not forget Billy.
If he doesn't hit that home run, Fist never comes to the plate.
And by the way, if people forget, Bill Lee started Game 7 in 1975, and the Red Sox had a 3-0 lead before the Reds came back, the Big Red Machine, and won the World Series. So he did pitch 14 years. We should mention, you're off the field and your comments kind of precede you, won 119 ball games. But, you know, back then, just help me here, because with the Gerbil and Zimmer and the culture back then, the sports writers loved you because they were a little hipper, at least some of them might have been. The fans loved you, and yet the baseball establishment, you who are just talking about regular stuff like Earth Day, like, you know, eating good food, were looked at as a kook. But you were able to build that persona and confront them. There must have been other guys of similar thoughts to you, just didn't have the nerve or the platform to go forward.
Prophets in their own time are not well respected, and they usually end up on crosses.
Can I quickly tell a story?
You know what? You just asked a question that
I'm
was
sorry,
3.5
I'm
minutes
sorry.
Long.
I want to talk about Cooperstown when the two of you shared.
Well, go ahead. Your questions are rambling as always, and I haven't said a word hardly.
Okay, I'll back off this. It's 2006, and we're in Cooperstown, and Denny McClain and Bill Lee are sharing a booth. And so Denny is there to do commerce. He's got a stack of books. He's got a bag full of balls and pictures to sign. And Bill Lee starts telling stories. And the people start to gather. And the throng grows. And Denny is sitting in his chair just thinking about commerce that's being impeded by Bill Lee. And he goes, he won't shut up. He keeps talking. And there's more and more people. I go, Denny, he's here to have fun and maybe sell a book. You're just thinking about money. You probably forget that. But I tell you, the look on his face as you entertain that growing throng is
it was incredible.
Never forget.
Yeah.
I remember that. That is me, though. You know, the funny thing is, when I die, I'm going to have it all mechanically altered that when they open the box, I spring up and start speaking again.
My recollection of that day is that once you started telling your stories, you know, and we all have a tendency to what? We pump them up a little bit. They get bigger and longer and better. And I got to tell you something. Even I, at the end of that first 25 minutes,
Denny said he won't shut up.
I was mesmerized.
He's not going to stop. He's not going to stop talking.
Oh God! When these memoirs come out, this book is going to be over 700 pages long.
Oh my God!
This
I'm not sure I'll live that long to read it.
Go ahead.
I'm connecting all the dots, you know, and I'm talking. I mean, I can connect Bill Fall, Bill Dow, Charlie Duff. The 68 riots, Church's Chicken, Ernie Harwell, Bo Schembechler, Harry's Haberdasher, the red bell-bottom pants, and Denny McClain, all in one paragraph.
But Bill, you're leaving out something very important, and that is your role in the very history of our country. In 1988, you ran for president of the United States from the Rhinoceros Party. Your platform was bulldozing the Rocky Mountains so Alberta could receive a few extra minutes of sunlight.
Brilliant.
You wanted to ban guns and butter. Your slogan was, no guns, no butter. Both can kill.
They'll both kill you.
Tell us about
I'm telling you, just think where we would be on this planet if I was elected. We never would have gone to Iraq. You know, there never would have been Afghanistan. Bin Laden would never have come to power and created all these religious divides that we have today. And now they take back fiddle to a little virus that creeps out of a human and a civet got together in illicit carnal knowledge somewhere in Wuhan, China. Go figure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's jump to 1988. You live in Vermont and have for quite a while. In 2016, jump from 1988 to 2016, Bill Lee, chosen by the Liberty Union Party as its nominee for governor of the state of Vermont. You never even heard of the Liberty Union Party before, but they wanted you to run. You didn't take campaign contributions, and your campaign slogan was, quote, so far left, we're right. Tell us about that.
It was Bernie Sanders' original party. This was six guys who got together with Bernie, who, if I'm looking over, this is funny. I am living in a valley, the northernmost valley, where the rivers run north. In other words, I'm at a high plateau, and I am in really, before the War of 1812, I am in Canada. And after the War of 1812, they divided it at the 45th parallel. I'm looking over a ridge where I get all the wood for my baseball bats. It's called Stoner Ridge, honest to God.
Stoner Ridge, how fitting.
And over Stoner Ridge, if Stoner Ridge wasn't there, I could see Bernie Sanders' house.
You know, what's interesting?
This is what connects the dots. I connect dots. I'm a Marvin, a connector. I am like Malcolm Gladwell wrote in The Tipping Point, Outliers and What the Dog Knew. I connect everybody. There's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. There's no degrees of me.
You left out his best book, Blink. I thought that was the best of Gladwell's four books. But, you know,
what you learn is in the first 1/8 of a second,
right,
which is what every pitcher knows.
And then you intellectualize and talk yourself out of it. And then you think it much too much, and then you change your mind and make a mistake. Hey, before we get, by the way, you're going to have to explain your thing. We've been talking a lot about Bo Schembechler lately because I don't know whether you followed it or not. But
what a
there's a huge scandal that his doctor, like the Nassar case at Michigan State and the Strauss case at Ohio State, allowed this perverted doctor to perform digital rectal exams on his players for many years, and Bo knew about it. So what is your beef with Bo Schembechler?
Well, digital rectal thermometers, what do you expect from a hole? It's like, think about it. Here's the guy who got rid of Ernie Harwell. How stupid is he?
We've gone over that many times.
Hey, listen, let me ask you this. Your wonderful romantic relationship with Don Zimmer.
Oh, my God. You know, he's living proof, the Peter principle, that you rise to the level of your inability. The guy had steel plates in his head, put there by pitchers. His last at bat in the major leagues was in 69 for the Washington Senators, and a guy named Jim Cott threw him a 3-2 backdoor curveball and struck him out cold. I mean, he took the pitch for strike three. Now, it was a 3-2 pitch, didn't challenge him. He's going to hate pitchers, and he's going to hate left-handers more than anybody.
Yeah.
All you have to do is look at history, and you'll find out who's going to hate you.
This is so funny because you had some other guys along with you called the Buffalo Heads. Denny, 6 or 7 years earlier in Washington, had the Underminers, who hated Ted Williams, Dick Billings, Bernie Allen, etc. I found it so similar that these overbearing lunatic managers drive the players crazy, and what can you do? You kind of band up against them. Were you aware of the Underminers, and did you guys ever talk about that?
Yeah, no, Ted was tough. Ted was tough, mean. He's a great guy to go drinking with. But as a pitcher, you know, he thought you were the dumbest person on the planet.
Yep.
I have a picture of Ted Williams. Ted Williams, I have him laughing. And the last thing I remember of Ted, well, other than when Ted walked down the street, he said he wanted to be known as the greatest hitter that ever lived.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And guess what? He hit on all three of my wives.
You're kidding.
No. He hit on Mary Lou at the pool. He hit on Pam. And when he was in a wheelchair, he hit on Diana and had his head right in her cleavage.
Well, that means you have good taste in wives. That's all. You thought your wives something. Were very attractive.
I said, Ted, you are the greatest hitter I ever seen. And I said, you're the luckiest son of a bitch in the world. You had great eyesight. You threw right, you hit left. Therefore, you had your dominant eye on your right side of your head, so your big nose didn't get in the way of the pitches, and you could see everything perfectly. He didn't even know what dominant eye theory was. And
I'll tell you this, that he had one standing joke that he used to tell about every other day, was what's dumber than one pitcher? Two.
Yeah.
And he would use that line 1,000 times a month.
Well, here's a guy that you guys disagree on. Because after Bill's blow-up with Don Zimmer, he got traded to the Expos, and he was reunited with a guy he liked, Dick Williams, who you hated, Denny, when you pitched for him in Oakland.
I think that's
right. Oh, he's a tough man. He's a tough man. I want to tell you, he got John DeAquisto almost to jump out of an airplane at 37,000 feet. He said, we should have drafted your wife instead of you, you ballless son of a blah, blah, blah. But I'll tell you something. The guy knew how to win, and he knew when he was either the luckiest SOB on the world or he was a great manager. And you know, most managers, what did Casey Stengel said? The key to managing is keep the five guys that hate you away from the 20 that are undecided.
And I tell you, Dick was with a capital D, he was a dick. And
No. There's a great story about Dick. Norma was his wife, and I end up playing in a fantasy camp, and he's managing my ball club, and I'm a day late. I arrive, and I see this guy in a hotel room being taken away in handcuffs. It's Dick Williams for indecent exposure. And I'm there, and I don't even know it's Dick, and I come to the club, and he's the manager, and I'm the coach. He's not there. So I call Norma, and I said, do you hear about Dick? And he said, do you want me to send him home? And he says, no, let him stick it out there in Winter Haven.
I got a bunch of questions, Eli and Denny, for Bill, if I could manage to get a couple
of course,
in.
Bob, go ahead.
Bill, your late teammate John Kennedy gave you the nickname. Yes, that was his name, John Kennedy, gave you the nickname the Spaceman. Do you like that?
I hated it. I hated it. You know how I got that nickname? As I pitched the second landing on the moon, I threw 8 2/3 innings against Detroit, got 2 base hits, a fake bunt, double down the left field line past Brooks Robinson, came back, we won the ball game 7-4. I threw 8 2/3 innings. I came in with nobody out, bases loaded, got a double play, struck out the pitcher. This is back when we can hit. And I come in afterwards, and the crowd is around me. We're in first place. It's early in the year. And John Kennedy goes, he had a date. He'd made a date with his divorcee down the third baseline. And he goes, we got our own spaceman right here, blah, blah, blah. And he couldn't get his clothes off fast enough to go spark this divorcee. And so basically I get my nickname from John Kennedy, a horny third baseman.
Okay, I got this one for you. Denny, of course, as you well know, had his Al Kaline. You had your Carl Yastrzemski. What was Yaz like to play with? How was he as a person and as a teammate?
Wow. I don't know if the statute of limitations is up on this. He is a sorry, sorry guy. He's wherever he is, he wants to be somewhere else. He's always in a hurry to get out of the places. He's a chain smoker, and when I saw him after his heart thing, I said, you know, you ought to get a second opinion, because I don't think you have a heart.
Oh, jeez.
And that's how I am with Carl. But he was my bridge partner. He cost me a lot of meal money. He was an overbidder. But he was a hard worker. His father dominated him. People don't realize that he lived under his uncles and everything else out there. And as a potato farmer, right. And his dad was an SOB. His dad was like Jimmy Pearsall's dad, you know. And that's when you're Carl Malden. I don't know if you ever saw Fear Strikes Out, but it's very difficult. You know, I've been writing poetry about. I cried all day today. I was writing poems last night, Mother's Day, and about my father. And my father came back from Okinawa. And he was a great ball player. And then he came back and threw too hard too soon and blew out his shoulder and became a third baseman. His favorite ball player was Don Zimmer.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God is right. And he says, how come you can't get along with that man, Bill? How come? I come home. He goes, how come? I said, Dad, do you and I see eye to eye? And my dad goes, you got a point there.
Why was his favorite player Don Zimmer?
It was a former
because
Dodger
he was
got
a third
hit in the head.
My dad became a third baseman. Yeah. My dad is in a documentary I have.
But Don Zimmer? Why not say, well, anyway? You know.
Exactly. Now, Don Zimmer and my dad were very similar. They were tough. They were, you know, all Army, all Marines. You know, they're typical people that fought in World War II. Zimmer didn't fight in anything. But,
and, you know, it seems like all the fathers back then were. I'm sorry. All the fathers, it seemed like, were like that back then. My dad was a tough SOB, too. And I'll tell you one story about Zimmer. When I pitched my second big league game against the Washington, I guess it was Washington Senators in 63, Zimmer come to the plate, and we're down a run or two. And I threw a ball. The ball could not have been 2 inches off the ground. And Don hit it and straight away center field in the lower deck. That was 440 feet.
God damn,
that was a
hitter,
shot and a half.
Kind of like a Sparky Anderson type. Although I think he had a better career than Sparky. But I'll tell you, and this is off the subject.
You would have had a better career than Sparky.
I remember the Red Sox coming to Tiger Stadium after they had lost a 4-game series by the score of 42-9 to the Yankees, as the Red Sox blew a 14-game lead from July under Zimmer's leadership. And you had just named him, I think, the gerbil. And I don't never forget standing around with a bunch of reporters. He's trying to say, oh, we're still going to keep it together. We can still win this thing. And just looking at him as the gerbil and having a hard time drinking it all in. But it's a very dramatic moment, obviously, for you, because your relationship with him had hit the skids. And as it turns out, of course, the Red Sox lost on the 1-game playoff to the Bucky.
But why the gerbil? Where'd the gerbil come from?
He looks like one. I don't know why. Okay. Why the gerbil?
Oh, no. He actually, kids wrote me a letter and said, Mr. Lee, I think you're mistaken. I said, gerbils are thin. You were thinking of a hamster. And so I had to apologize to all the gerbils. But here's what Zimmer, I said, Billy Martin. They said, what is Billy Martin? I said, he's a no good dirty rat. He let his daughter rot for like 3 weeks at a Peruvian jail for lack of bail. She was down there on some drug thing. And all of a sudden, you know, he says, well, if he's a dirty rat, what's Don Zimmer? I said, he's fat, he's puffy, he's got big cheeks, kids love him, he's a gerbil. It was a compliment.
Hey, can we talk a little about baseball? Because you were a real – I'm sorry, Bob. I was going to ask him about his
– Well, you go ahead. Although
the so-called spaceman and you know, Bowie Kuhn finds you because you said you sprinkled the pot in your pancakes. But you're serious about the game. You didn't like the DH coming in. Tell us about your last at-bat and also you're a traditionalist despite being what people would look as an off-center type of guy.
Well, my last at-bat was against Lolich at Fenway Park near the last series of the year, and he had me 0-2. I came in relief, and he had me 0-2, and I moved up in the box because I knew he was going to, and I kind of talked him into a fastball, and he threw me a fastball, and I hit a line shot at K-Line, who didn't break on it properly, and it went under his glove. They gave me a triple, but as I rounded third, I had an inside-the-park home run, and I couldn't find Papowski because I'd never hit a triple before. And he's a little short son of a bitch down the line. And I stopped, or I would have had an inside-the-park home run, which was actually the last triple in regular season ever hit by a pitcher.
Yeah. That's good.
Went to the DH in 73.
Yeah. So what I want to ask you, Bill, when the Red Sox used to come to Detroit, when I was still working in my hometown, I interviewed you every series you guys were there. I always thought you out was great. Earlier in this interview, you mentioned the name Saul Bellow, perhaps never mentioned before.
Seize the day.
Saul Bellow is one of the greatest writers of fiction who ever lived. Now, we would talk about books, and you said to me one day, you must read this book. I said, yeah, what is it, man? Small is Beautiful by E.F. Schumacher. So I did go out, I did buy the book, and I did read it. Tell us about what that book meant to you and how or if it impacted your life.
What's the name again? Oh, what?
Small is Beautiful.
Small is Beautiful. It goes in there with Buckminster Fuller. It goes in with everybody that loves the planet first. You know, this virus and everything is bad because it's going to eliminate human beings. There are a lot of freaking animals out there jumping for joy right now.
Yep.
That's what it is. It's all about the earth first. And you've got to live in harmony on this planet. And we have destroyed the environment. We have created these wet systems where they combined animals improperly. And this is where these viruses generate from. And, you know, it's not conspiracy. It's not that. It's the way we treat this planet. Small is Beautiful. Denial of Death by Ernest K. Becker, Operating Manual for Spaceship Earth by Buckminster Fuller. If you're going to run this planet, if you're going to be president of the United States, if you're going to get this planet on the right and the straight and narrow, if in your glove compartment has to be an operating manual, and that operating manual's by Buckminster Fuller.
And that's, by the way,
probably one of the linchpins of my life, along with Small is Beautiful. My garden is totally organic. I am planting pinto beans, okra, collard greens, and I'm going to think if global warming does occur, which I think it will, I will have the greatest Mexican food restaurant in all of Vermont.
Well, Bill, I'll tell you what, you got some great ideas, but I'm still never, ever going to vote for you as long as you intend to bulldoze the Rocky Mountains. I can't support that, Bill.
I understand, but I want to lower the boiling point of water too, so we save energy. But now oil just went into the dump, you know. And I'm telling you, we can drink and drive. We got a lot of drinking, and we got a lot of free gas, but we got nowhere to go.
Have you read Sapiens by Yuval Harari, which is all about how what we've done to animals is the biggest.
I've heard of it. I have not read it. I have got on my floor right now, I have Tom Clark poems, poem about me and Roberto Clemente and Bombo Rivera when he went to the laundromat trying to make out with all the women when he was in Chicago. I've got Margaritaville, a book about Buffett and all the people. I have John McPhee, A Sense of Where You Are, the Bill Bradley story, which I just finished, a must-read for anybody that loves sports. You know, if Bradley had been elected president, none of this would have happened either.
What's the name of that one? Because the only Bradley book I read was Life on the Run, which was his last season. What's the name of the Bradley book?
A Sense of Where You Are, John McPhee.
Okay.
It is the greatest book you will ever read on sport, ever.
Bill, let me ask you this. Do you think, and a little more serious than what we've been doing here for just a moment, do you think we're in the middle of a reset of some kind?
Yes.
I do, too.
Yes, we are. We are in a reset from 1933, when the market collapsed. We ain't seen the collapse yet. We ain't seen anything go down. Everybody, the federal government is propping up the stock market and everything else. But you're going to see a lot of people, a lot of people getting sick when they open this thing up. You're going to see a lot of things happen here, and you better be, you know, able to survive. I mean, I'm, you know, and I'm lucky. I'm sitting here with an RWS high velocity pellet rifle that is silenced, made in West Germany, with an 18 power scope. You know, you ain't going to hear it when it hits you.
It sounds like the NRA is going to support your next presidential candidacy.
Well, I'll tell you, I got more guns than the NRA. You know, my mother's name was Paula Teresa Hunt. My father was Paul Adams Hunt. My great-grandfather was Rockwell Dennis Hunt, the dean of graduate students at USC. You know, my family dammed the Colorado River. My family is the reason why water never gets to Mexico.
Or California, for that matter.
Well, it gets there. It gets down there. That's the Salton Sea is an artificial lake that was broken during a flood down on the Colorado River. People don't know that. I am a sixth-generation Californian. People don't know it. I should have been governor way before Jerry Brown.
Like Gavin Newsom now. Hey, so anybody have anything else? Should we let Bill go?
Bill, you're always so great. I loved interviewing you. We've done many of these things together over the years, though you may not recall. Thanks for coming on.
I appreciate it. I recall everything. The trouble is I have this scattered ADD. I'm Asperger's, like you read about. You know, I'm the white rabbit. I'm late for a very important date. No time to say hello, goodbye. I'm late.
Well, you have a great day. You haven't been late today with us. You've been terrific, and we really appreciate your time.
You betcha, boys. Bye.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
I didn't know what to expect. You know, I haven't talked to him in a long time, and just as sharp as ever and as opinionated as ever.
He's always like this. You know, this is him. This is the real Bill Lee. Yeah. I mean, this is, as we know from the Hall of Fame.
Great entertainer.
He went on for 2 days like this.
And the one thing is, because I've spoken with Bill in the past just because his persona kind of is larger than baseball itself.
Yeah.
He's had a movie made about him starring Josh Duhamel. He's also had a couple documentaries made about him. But what I always loved was that damn Ephus pitch.
Not many people
had that Ephus pitch where you're throwing 40 miles an hour and it's a huge loop. It's one big arc. And he perfected it for a while.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure if anybody perfected it, but and I don't say that critically. I'm just telling you that if it was such a good pitch, everybody would have thrown it.
Well, it's you know yourself, Danny. It's a hard pitch to throw and get over the plate.
You
know,
it's impossible.
So, Brandon, I'm very impressed. You're such a great baseball guy that you knew that at your age. The Ephus pitch, Eli, I think you'll agree with me on this, was started by a guy named Rip Sewell
back in the
40s. And he threw one, or it was an epirixis. Somebody threw one to Ted Williams in the 1941 All-Star Game in Detroit, an Ephus pitch. And Williams hit way into the upper deck in right field. I'm pretty sure about that.
And I got to know Rick Sewell and his son, who was a pretty good golfer at one time, because they lived in Lakeland for a while.
All right, boys, good show. See you all again for another edition of No Filter Sports on Thursday. Be well, stay safe, and see you then.
Be careful, be well, stay safe, folks. Thank you.